Hey everybody, a really special guest that I'm super delighted to have back, and it's been too long, in fact. Chris McIntosh of Capitalist Exploits, also Glen Orchy Capital, and someone I've always considered a very considered, smart mind, and also incredibly emotionally stable, the way he talks, the way he delivers his phraseology. This is the kind of profile that you would certainly want in reset times to have on the hand on the till in terms of money management, which is what Glen Orchy is all about. Chris will say some more about that at the end. Be sure to stay for the whole video. But Chris, glad to have you back. How are you doing?
Well, I'm glad to be back, Francis. As you mentioned, it's been far too long. How have I been? Well, I certainly can't complain. It is easily one of the most interesting times to be alive. There's something I was thinking about the other day, which was, you know, you go through periods like all of us, I suppose, at some point do, negative, positive, and you see some of the shit fuckery which is taking place around you. And there's a part of me that goes, really, this? But then there's another part of me which is like, we are living in some of the most interesting times you could possibly want to ever live in. And for that, I think we should be grateful. This is just a world. You know, all the world is a stage. We're simply souls inhabiting these bodies, and our experience on this plane lasts as long as it does. And then we, whatever happens to us, I have no idea. But I think that I, for one, I feel like this is such an for intellectual people like myself and yourself, this is a truly fascinating time to be alive, to be trying as best as we can to understand what's going on. And then to actually do, to be able to bring something to the table that's positive.
Well, great response. And I suppose that's our job. Both of us, it's seek not only to understand this Rubik's Cube of multiple elements and rotational aspects, this grand game, but it's also how do we add value to other people in our assumed better understanding if we are so good at what we do to believe that we are better at it. I consider you one of those minds that certainly are, which is why we're always delighted to have you back. What is the seminal, by the way, gold, one of the first things I said to you when we logged back on is your gold price, actually, it's just gone another $24 up. So when I told you it was 4,330, it's now 4,356. What are one of the seminal things or misconceptions about this move that people might construe out of what's happening today and the last year, months in terms of gold? So let's start there.
Yeah, so, well, people pay attention to price. When price moves, they pay attention to it. It's a little bit like if you're walking through the desert or the jungle or any environment. Something that sits outside of the ordinary catches our attention. And so we are attracted to that. Okay. People are now attracted to gold as a consequence of price movement. I think it's important to try and understand why that movement has taken place, right? Much like we could be in the Okavango Delta, right? Driving along. And then you have all the birds, and the birds move because we've moved, right? And they're all spectacular. Now they catch our attention. It's like, what made the birds move? Maybe there was an alligator in the water. Maybe it was, yeah, you on your motorbike. There's a number of things. I am interested functionally in trying to understand, are there alligators in the water that are going to likely move the flamingos? And then the flamingos move. And I go, that's a cool. It still catches my attention. But I've understood the underlying reasons why they might move. Maybe it's a hippo, maybe it's a croc, whatever it is. When I look at gold in that light, gold is a position that we've held for many, many years, not because it moved, but because there were alligators in the water, because there is underlying structural reasons that are probable, and all investing is sheer probability. Like, you're going to get some shit wrong sometimes, and you're going to get some things right. But everything just comes down to probability. So there was and has been a high probability that gold will react to the underlying structural problems. So those underlying structural problems are that we have a debt, system, which is now in the process of, one could say it's blowing up, one could say it's being dismantled or taken down by purpose. Either which way, it was going to transpire, and as a consequence, you're going to get a price move in gold and precious metals and so on and so forth. So when people ask the question now of like, oh my gosh, gold's gone up so much, do I sell? Is this the end? We need to go back to the original reason why gold might have moved. And the reason why gold might have moved is because of this overlying massive debt problem. Has that gone away? No. Is it worse, better? It's kind of worse. So while gold has run a lot now, and maybe from a trader's perspective, I might be shy of getting long. I'm a long-term deep value investor. I hold my positions ideally sometimes for 5-10 years. Then this is very, very easy for me. The answer is absolutely not. I will continue to hold those positions until such time as those debts have been restructured and we have a new political, social, economic order, which is likely what is going to transpire. That's going to be incredibly chaotic. The kind of shit that we've seen in the last 5 years, as mad as it's been, I think will get even madder for a whole host of reasons. So that's gold. Long.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other part that goes with it was its junior sister metal, which has now technically surpassed a very strong area, and for now is still underperforming in terms of gold-silver ratio. It has come down a bit, but it's still upper mid-70s. And that's an interesting point, because the thing I'm finding on X and mainstream and even the FT that's admitting, okay, gold's run 4,000, but why it's not a good time to invest, it's dangerous. Type headlines. So the MSM, having ignored the space, are now being forced to try get in front of the narrative, but then at the same time attach not really glowing reviews about what it truly represents. You and I both kind of know about the MSM and where we put them in terms of this, but many retail guys or even some influencers are actually saying, well, we should be getting out now. And I have a view, and I'd love the way in our pre-chat you put it, and I'd like you to, almost for want of a repetition, to give us your take and reason, because it's absolutely synonymous with mine. Why isn't this over? Why shouldn't everybody be exiting gold, silver, platinum, all of them, and calling a top?
Well, it's quite simple. The reason that the gold bugs, bless their socks, typically say that gold moves on inflation. There's no evidence of that being true. Gold moves on a lack or loss of faith. And when you get, and so a loss of faith comes about as a consequence of a collapse or at least a downward pressure on currency. So what are bonds? Bonds are simply long-dated currency. Where is the biggest bubble in the world today? It's in bonds. So bonds have rolled over. I believe they've rolled over. And there's a number of mechanisms that could have put in place. You could presumably go about trying to hold interest rates at a certain level, but by doing so, you simply land up targeting a currency, right? Or you let the currency go and the bonds remain. Like, either which way, you're kind of caught between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah.
Ultimately, because of the sheer size and magnitude of this bubble, you're going to have a devaluation of both bonds and currency. Again, one just simply being long dated promise of the other. And so in that environment, you go, well, what's a devalue against? It devalues against money, you know, all money being credit ex gold, which is money.
Yeah.
You know, gold is money, everything else being credit, another way to put it. And we are in this credit collapse. So, again, there's no reason to believe that we would be anywhere near the end of the cycle until such time as the debts have been repaid, restructured, and solved, sorted out. Now, with that restructuring of bonds and currency, will be a political transformation and possibly even social, certainly economic. We're watching that transpire now, right? And it's where we get things like capital controls. It's where we get things like wars. It's where we get things like civil unrest. All of these things are part and parcel of the same equation. And so none of those have gone away. In fact, they're ramping up. You know, there was the MAGA crowd who came out with the idea that, you know, provided Orange Man came in, things were going to be fine because he was going to stop the wars, he was going to release the Epstein list, and he was going to drain the swamp, and yada, yada, yada. Now, you can think what you will of Trump. I mean, Trump matters. He's just a podium donut. but the reality now is that he's sanctioned, not just sanctioned the war with Ukraine, he's actually suggested to Zelensky that he can not just get back all the land that he's lost, but actually more. Now, what does that mean? More means an incursion into Russia, which is a justification and a acknowledgement that NATO, because this is never a Ukraine war. This is always a NATO war.
Yeah.
It's an invitation for NATO to incur into Russian territory. What that means is, because this is an existential threat to Russia, that means the potential for nukes to land not just on European cities, but on US cities, because it's Putin's money. He understands who the real powers behind this are.
Yeah.
Anyways, you've got all of that transpiring. Then you've got Israel, which is the leading hand behind the US government, clearly, and anybody, you know, it's not anti-septic to suggest it when it's important. So you have this ramping up of the Greater Israel Project, and that requires taking of more land, and it requires the elimination of Iran. So all of these things point to more conflict. While that's transpiring, the U.S., for its part, understands that they are going to have to, at some point, fight a war against the East, if you will. And so what they're doing is they're shoring up the North-South corridor. This is why they paid so much attention to Greenland. It's why Canada is under so much pressure now, because they want four bases up on the Arctic at the top there. And they're going to keep pushing them on every single little thing until they crack, and they will take control of that. It's why they put so much pressure on Mexico. It's why they're now putting pressure on Venezuela. And it's why Trump just rolled out the red carpet to Milei, who they will keep in power and will be a lapdog. And they will pour billions of dollars into that, because Argentina is littered with resources. So that's pretty bullish for that. But the point is, you have a North-South corridor. It's all about supply chains, and it's all about resources. That is being consolidated now. You can't fight a war over there until you have your base secured, sorted. The one thing they haven't really sorted necessarily is Panama. That's probably to come. There's a conflict there. It's why the BlackRock deal got done.
I heard it didn't go through. I'm here now, by the way, that it was mooted, but didn't fully go through.
There's issues there with Li Ka-shing. But anyway, so the point is, you're watching these geopolitical plays. It's about securing that North-South corridor, and it's about doing so ahead of a conflict. Now, all of that, just if you broadly say, what does that mean? It means more conflict, Francis. What is more conflict? What asset classes do well in conflict, and which ones do poorly? Like, this is not hard. This is on the back of a bond bubble that's freaking nuts, okay? And on the back of an equity market, which makes zero sense with respect to the Mag 7 and ridiculous valuations. So we've got we have a lot of risk in the markets right now that unfortunately the vast majority of people don't understand. And they don't understand it because most of their capital is sitting in passive vehicles, quote unquote, passive vehicles. And those passive vehicles simply just, you know, recurringly buy on a market-weighted basis, which is to say they just keep more and more, pouring more and more money into the top 10 companies in the S&P, which makes them bigger and bigger and bigger. This is systemic risk. When this thing folds, At some point it will, because there's, the math here does not work at all in any shape or form. That has the potential for contagion. And so it's a pretty tough time to be investing, but I think it's, people should be focusing more on return of capital than return on capital at this point in time.
Yeah.
And in that world, gold is king. So why would you sell gold just because it's gone up a bunch? That doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah. In other words, from your take, which is very similar to mine, the big flags for the fact that we're progressing into a more mature stage will be the world gone mad, escalations in military conflicts, even beyond what we already have, and probably a bit of the problem reaction solution, Hegelian dialectic, which will involve a major crisis that we'll all be dragged into in some form, which could be bank failure, it could be lockdowns for climate, or any number. You can open the lucky bag. They've now created almost a lucky packet. I don't know if you remember growing up in SA, Chris.
Yeah.
You were Zimbabwean SA. We used to, you know, as kids, we'd buy the lucky packet and it was guaranteed four or five different kinds of sweets. And then there'd be some shitty plastic choy made in Taiwan of various varieties. And you never knew quite what you'd get. They've created this sort of Pandora's box of potentials. We can all guess. I don't profess to be more skilled. But it does also feel that the individual, in an economic and financial sense, has to be dragged into some form of problem reaction solution event in terms of their finances. It could also be biological, physiological, military, geopolitical as well. But there's probably going to be some form of fiscal economic reset where they go, oh shit, this has happened and now bang, never mind, we'll start again, and all of this, the sort of clearing of the deck. Someone's got to knock the chessboard over because they don't like the lie of the pieces. Do you get that feeling as well?
Yeah. And I mean, look, I think to some degree we're lucky in that these people are not that smart. I think sometimes people give them too much credit, but most everything that they've rolled out has been done before. They've been tried and tested it before. Okay.
Yeah.
We had, like, you know, prior to the COVID fun and games, we had the same thing with what was it in the UK? Bloody where they slaughtered all of the cattle.
Yeah, mad cow disease.
Mad cow disease. Yep. Bovine flu, whatever. So and that was also nonsense. Now, so they were kind of testing the waters and seeing how big they could push that. So that was sort of somewhat predictive to what we had with COVID, which is much, much larger. And so they're always, and then you've had, for example, Malta, right? They just seized everybody's assets. You got like a ton of 20 cents on the dollar after they liquidated everything and you got screwed. And
you mean Malta, or are you referring to Cyprus?
Sorry, Cyprus.
Yeah. Okay.
Cyprus.
Yeah.
Yes, I was just talking to a friend who's in Malta, sitting in the back of my head. Yeah.
Some small island in the Med. You know, I get
that.
Yeah,
that's Cyprus. So again, like these things have been tried and tested before, and they kind of see how does the populace work. Obviously, people got a bit grumpy, but nobody lost their head. In fact, there was no people even went to jail. This is all hunky dory, all cool. So you're right. I think we'll see, you know, the same. We'll see something bigger, but it's just going to be, it'll have been tested before. It'll have been tried before, you know, whether it was MF Global and their stealing of client assets and how they got away with that, whether it's like Cyprus, who knows? Who knows? But it'll be something like that, just on a grander scale. A question, and I want to get away from worrying, and well, not worrying, but I want to get away from the sort of the negative side of things. These are all known to us. A lot of these things are known to us. It's far more valuable, I think, for us to actually say, okay, how are we going to deal with this? Let's live proactively.
Yeah.
Let's not just be victims to these psychopaths. How can we go about addressing this? And so in that respect, you know, it can be simple things. It's like you're not holding as much capital within banks it's having multiple bank accounts. And I understand that there's going to be listeners and viewers of this who might sit there and go, oh, well, I don't really have the capabilities. Whatever. Most of the time, that is untrue. It yeah. comes down to sheer desire. And like if you put yourself in a position where you said, okay, tomorrow I have nothing because I have everything concentrated here, what would I have done differently? And people will go, oh, well, I would have maybe got on a plane and gone and done X, Y, Z. The time to do that is now. It's not after the fact when you don't have the capital to even get on a plane. So there are measures that one can take to mitigate that risk. And that's, I think, what's more important. Same thing with respect to a portfolio. You know, where are you invested into? What jurisdictions? And then obviously the domicile of your portfolio. That matters a lot too. These are things that individuals have not had to worry about for all of their lives, pretty much, you know, unless you were in some pretty messed up jurisdiction. It wasn't something that people even considered to be that big of an issue. Most of the time, people were structuring themselves more for tax reasons. This isn't even about tax, despite the fact that tax is a big issue and it's going to become and continue to be a huge issue. Because that's another mechanism that's used to control people.
Yeah.
But this is actually back to the point we made at the start. This is more about return of capital. How do you ensure return of your capital? And there's many elements to it. It's not just about positioning in like gold or whatever you want to be buying. Those are, I would say, almost somewhat easier equations to solve. We are at this time where we're going to go through a political restructuring. We are going through it now. The world will be restructured. What that looks like, I don't profess to know. I can make a guess like anybody else, and I could probably sound relatively articulate and intelligent about what that is, but it could still be wrong. So I think the best course of action is to have diversification, to set up as many rails as one can, and you stay away from the obvious. This is true of a portfolio management. You don't go and buy NVIDIA. I mean, it's just like,
yeah.
Okay. You don't go and set up in the UK.
Yeah.
Or France. France is on the ropes with respect to their debt. They're going to pull out any number of stops to try and address that. So to go and set up a corporate entity or a trust or something like that in France seems
stupid.
It's impressively dumb. There are many other jurisdictions which are far less bad. So it's simple things like that. And the reality is many people just go with wherever they happen to be and whatever they know. So if they happen to be living in, I'm just picking on France. Apologies to all the frogs out there. But it's, the going with the status quo is really not the answer necessarily. And look, we live in an age where the information is at your goddamn fingertips. It's only laziness that is, that is halting you from having potentially a better outcome.
Yeah. So no excuses for not taking the appropriate action. I mean, my risk list, you're talking about positive, you know, checklist for reducing risk. I'd like to say you need to de-Westify yourself in terms of all Western nations, particular hotspots being the US, the UK, Europe generally. But we've clearly also seen pretty draconian, Canadian and Australian. And even yourself under Ardern during the COVID was pretty brutal in terms of that. So people need to add a bit of East, Middle East, even Africa over their Grand South against their overexposure. And this is one of the hardest messages because we live in a society where a small slice of the total world population is Western. It's like that. And here's the whole, you know, the whole spectrum of all population, let's say whatever then they say the number is. I don't actually believe the number for other reasons, but let's not go into that conspiracy. But let's just say that's the whole set of humanity. We are sitting here in the West and we're about this. And if you look at the income share, it's up here. you know, it's average mm-hmm. earnings and et cetera. And the rest are, you know, like that.
Yep.
And we're looking at a global communism, a technological surveillance grid of global communism and a wannabe UBI. So they need to welfare state here. So there's a leveling. It's the great leveling of the privileged Western existence. And that comes with scavenge mode of government tax. It comes with the debasement and the fiat debasement, the fact that it's all inflated lie, basically.
I think there's also a requirement to eliminate some of that, right? We're seen as a liability, where the irony is that you've got these socialist governments that have promised all manner of things.
Yeah.
They don't see that promise as being the liability. They see the person they've promised it to as being a liability.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So sending them to the meat grinder against Russian inventory is a perfectly good solution in their mind.
Yeah.
You can bet your ass that all these immigrants pouring into Europe are not the ones that are going to be sent to the front lines in Ukraine.
No. No. Yeah, they're unregistered. They don't know they're there. They know they're there when they have to pay them for a hotel.
Youngers, even if they're registered, they could just simply be like, I'm part of a protected class. Maybe I'm Muslim, maybe I'm whatever. And this is nothing against Muslims in the world.
Yeah.
It's just within the West, there's this this structure which is allowed for, well, communism always divides. It's a divide and conquer strategy, right?
Yeah.
And so the divide and conquer is being utilized. And so if the idea is to conquer the Western white male, then that's what's going to get conquered. And there'll be all number of ridiculous reasons put forward why others might not be the ones sent to the front lines, for example. But so that's, you know, that's a huge de-risking. I mean, shit, it's because not just like you could be rich and even manage to somehow keep all your capital. But if you're sent to the front line, or your son is, then what does it matter?
And the nations where you might get conscripted are the Western ones.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
Yeah. And that's part of de-risking yourself and your sons. And they're not stopping at males. You saw what's
going on in Ukraine. We don't know what a male is, Francis.
Yeah, exactly. That's right.
So I don't know what a woman is. If we don't know what a woman is, we certainly can't figure out what a male is.
Exactly. So yeah, it's quite scary. So going back to the positive sides of action plan for extreme times, that most people listening to this feel like they're watching some nightmare apocalypse movie that you and I see that they just can't see happening. What actually happens when you have, there's still a quadrillions in debt, and as far as sustainability, that we're not anywhere near the end of the gold bull market, whilst there is these huge numbers still in the fake phony fiat debt system. And what happens to the average man? Let's talk about the inertia person that continues to coexist, and every day he goes to bed and wakes up in the same Western country, he is actually committing to a signed contract to walk. I don't know if you remember Shawshank Redemption, how he gets his freedom by walking, you know, crawling through the shit pipe, basically. Mm-hmm. They are foregoing that opportunity to get their freedom by staying in that old school prison every night that they're not digging and breaking the wall down and taking sand into.
Inertia is one of the most dangerous things. Inertia is fine for, or can be fine for many long periods of time. So you have periods of time after political restructurings, typically where you have calm, and you'll have it for multi-generations, or sometimes up to multi-generations, depending. We're not at that time now. That'll come. And that's probably something to look forward to, because I'm convinced that they're not going to win this. They're not gonna win this, but that doesn't mean that there won't be untold bloodshed, suffering along the way. But to address it, I think, is that one needs to look at, you start with the obvious. Where is the biggest risk? Like, you can't eliminate all, like I like to say, in a portfolio, you can't eliminate risk. You can manage it. You can't eliminate it.
Yeah.
So you manage risk. We're risk managers. We're not risk eliminators. Okay.
Yeah.
So in that respect, you say, where is the obvious risks? Where are the greatest risks? And that's true of your portfolio. It's true of your life. It's true of like a whole range of things. Okay. But when you view it from that perspective, it's actually not that hard to identify where the greatest risks are. And so you try then to eliminate those risks, and you just keep going down the ladder.
Yeah.
And the ways that you eliminate a risk might also change as time changes. We're in a very fluid, flexible environment.
Yeah. There's a lot of dynamism. There's new laws being written up all the time. Yeah.
Exactly. And so it's you have to just keep on your toes. And it's back to what I said at the start, which is that this is such a fascinating time to be alive.
Yeah, it is. Okay.
We are very fortunate at this point in time to be able to view this almost like we would be viewing a fish tank at an aquarium. And we're like, oh, there's a fish swimming around. Isn't that fascinating?
Yeah.
Right? But the fish swimming around that are fascinating, one of them just got eaten. Okay? And you realize that we are part of the fish in the tank.
Yeah.
We have the ability to view it now as we do, relatively dispassionately, from the comfort of our homes, wherever they, we might be, and so on and so forth. But that, to continue to do that, we have to be very perceptive to and aware of those risks such that we can keep navigating them. And that's not going to stop. It's going to be a continuous system where things change, and we're going to have to keep rolling with that. But that doesn't mean you go, oh, well, I'm not going to do X because it could change tomorrow. Of course it could change tomorrow, right? But you just take the greatest risk. Where is the greatest risk? If I can mitigate that risk and do so by doing X, you go and do it, and you just keep doing it. That, by the way, I think just mentally puts you in a situation where you are far more productive. You are far, far happier. And it's just a better way to live your life, right?
Yeah.
Because the alternative. The alternative is you're a slave. And correct. I'm not a slave.
I think the only thing ideologically where I almost disagree is when you say they won't succeed. They seem to have all the bastions of power. I mean, it's quite clear that, as you mentioned, that America is a vassal occupied state. By the AIPAC, ADL, Israeli proxies. They run a blackmail, corporate, fascist, political controlling mechanism there. And they seem to have this, and just to talk like that about America is to ignore the fact that, you know, Starmer and Boris were, you know, the conservative and the red friends of Israel, et cetera, it runs through Europe. The Kalergi plan, all of these things. So you're talking actually about the Ursary Pharisees cartel actually have sewn up all the major political entities, including those that are ideologically behaving better, which is China and Russia. So it does seem like the injected supremacist class are already there. And they are engineering the collapse of one half on the basis that they're moving assets from their left hand to their right, west to east. That's kind of a very simplified paraphrasing. And that's part of how they crush Western. They turn it into the welfare state, the UBI compliance, any medical intervention. If you don't take, you lose your social score, all of this thing. And, let's say you and I are operating, we're outside of America, we're outside the worst parts of the West. We become significantly wealthy. We're centimillionaires on trading gold and silver and all of this. But we're not part of that supremacist class that is actually engineering everything on both sides of the game and just moving the assets. It's like a tidal flow. You know, the flow of the river is from high upstream, where America has been the sponge for investment capital. You've got this disproportionate saturation in the Mag 7 that at some point is going to flow away and is actually going to not only lead the Mag 7, I expect, but lead the nation as a whole. and with one of its single biggest industries is going to then disappear. The notion that all innovation can only start in a Californian garage or basement is going to be blown up as big new names will actually come out of the Middle East, China, Singapore capital formation. It's a long ramble. There is a question in there somewhere. But my whole point is, even if we win and we stay out of those regions, we don't get called into some military, we save our sons and all of them, we have multiple residencies, we're moving around, we're thinking smart, we're on our feet. What does survival look like? And have we really won? Yes, we'll get more life on one hand. But the larger force is literally just moving balls around. It's like the Thor, the god of thunder, is bringing rain and storms over there and sunshine over there. And we're moving with the weather almost.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is getting a little bit sort of, some might say woo-woo, but here's the way I think about it. Okay. It's a game. We're in the game. We can choose to view the game and play it, and we can still play it while understanding it's a game.
Yeah.
So like when you have little children, right? And the little children are playing, I don't know, Monopoly or something, okay? And you're sitting there watching them, and then they start bickering and fighting because so-and-so did this or so-and-so did that, and like they're striving to win, you know? And you sit there and you go, it's a game, right? It's cool. It's just a game. Don't worry about it. Mm. But the children, it's important to them because they want to win, because we're wired that way. You can still choose to play the game. And to some degree, we need to play the game. But you can play the game while still understanding it's a game. Then at a higher level. So you've got this game. You've talked about the structuring of and how things flow from west to east and so on and so forth. And yes, this is why we get cycles of history. Okay, so it's you could get all the way down to the business cycle, right? You have a cycle there, and it's a game that gets played. Yeah. And within that game, there are winners and losers, and you can understand the cycle, and you can be one of those, preferably the winner, by trying to understand the game. You have bigger cycles, credit cycles, revolution cycles, monetary cycles. It's all part of the game. Who stands at the top of that? Now, we could, and you've made the reference point basically that a lot of these nefarious characters are in that space. You know, certainly World War II was to some degree highlighted that. The two financiers on the German side, the financier of the war, and his brother on the US side, the financier of that yeah. War, they were playing. So
they were both called Wahlberg, by the way.
Yeah. Ironically. So, but one could take it beyond that and say, what are we doing on this planet? Who are we?
Yeah. What
frequency, vibration, energy. You know, that's within the cosmos. I think on that space, it's a game. And we're here to play that game and play it to the best of our abilities and to be hold true to certain values. And in that respect, they'll never win. They'll never win. So that doesn't mean that you don't die. It doesn't mean that you don't go through heartache and pain and suffering, and many millions of people do. That's, again, outside of the context of managing money or managing your life. Realize it's a game. Don't take yourself so seriously. Life's a game. Play it as best as you can. Identify the risks. Play the game and try as best as you can to win it. Ultimately, even if it's unwinnable, your probability of success in winning anything is highly, highly correlated with your belief you can win.
Yeah.
Okay. If you and I stopped and we said, this is impossible, we can never win, what do we do? Well, tomorrow we get up and we do nothing. We do absolutely nothing. To some degree, that's predictive then of us absolutely losing.
Yeah.
It's a little bit like I was having a discussion with a friend yesterday about eschatology. Okay, eschatology being the religious view of end of times, and many religions have them, and they've all got their own story. Now, we could sit down and say that an eschatological view, or any religious view, or any faith or belief system view, is absolutely nonsense. Okay, let's just say we believe in the spaghetti monster, And people go, fucking nonsense. There's no spaghetti monster. Now, if we manage to get enough people to believe there's a spaghetti monster and the actions they take are in accordance with the spaghetti monster's belief system or religious thing, whatever that is, let's just say, I don't know, you cut off your left pinky and you get enough people to believe it, well, they'll all cut off their left pinky. Now the consequences of something that you said was irrelevant and didn't exist matter, right? They say almost make it true. So if you have an eschatological view, as the Zionists do, for example, that the entire world is going to rise up against them and fight against them, and they will win because God will give them the power to win. If you could sit there and say that's nonsense. Now, if you believe that, the actions that you take to bring that about still matter. Like we could sit there and go,
it can be a sort of completely facetious spaghetti monster, like being chosen and all other kinds of rituals that they do. Oh, absolutely. I suppose ideologically, my point is if we win at our level that we can win, which isn't at the ultimate controlling power level, you've still played the game given the cards you were dealt with to the highest level. And we should all aspire to do that. And we should all aspire to help anyone else who's of great integrity, honesty, forthright individuals to try achieve the same and best outcome for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
The grander life question, I suppose, is you're essentially a survivor and you're still within the prison camp of the overlording class that has managed to establish itself off the...
Even that's where it comes into, you never sell your soul.
Yeah. And my coping mechanism, and it's interesting we've taken a slightly spiritual thing, is the real winning of the game is, can you adhere and be a principled person in unprincipled times? Mm-hmm. And if you can play the entire game on a basis of, these are my principles, I refuse to acknowledge the inversion, perversion, the fraud, the cacocracy, and the conduct of the larger system, I'm going to set out to be a man of principle. I'm going to adhere to everything I say as closely as humanly possible in my actions, and I'm going to be highly aligned, and I will have the life I will have, which could mean I'm on the losing team, because the unprincipled people may win out or they may not. But the real winning is whatever fate awaits me by living in a principled manner throughout. And that's a win.
Look, we got tested on some of this stuff with respect to the COVID. I mean, this is bringing it down to a much more simplistic view, right? But you had the choice, right, to wear a mask and do your grocery shopping. Or you had a choice to not wear your mask and do your grocery shopping and potentially be kicked out of the grocery store, right? So do you live by your standards or do you live by standards that you don't believe in? If you continue to live by your standards, you get kicked out of a bunch of grocery stores. I did, but I simply refused to bend the knee no matter what.
Yeah.
And so if you have enough people that have that ethos, you can't break them.
And this is why, again, community always seems so important to me, because the big disappointment on the COVID story was the higher number of people that was so prepared to bend a knee to what they considered a higher power in government.
That's always been the case.
Mm. It had always been the case, but having the failure of humanity to show their adherence to principle and the degree to which they succumb to coercion of various forms was a big disappointment. And you've got to...
I'm going to flip this. Okay. What happened during COVID wasn't that people suddenly lost their nerve or suddenly got brainwashed or anything else. What was simply revealed to us was what existed anyway.
Yeah.
It was just brought to the surface in a very visible, sometimes physical, violent representation. We got to see exactly what is actually there. It wasn't that something new came along. It wasn't that society suddenly lost their mind. No, society had already lost their mind. It was just revealed to us.
Yeah. It was an exposure. Now, like you say, the demon was always under the bed. You just had to lie on it and lift reveal.
That's right.
And there it was. Yeah.
Yes. Now, I would suggest that we're getting the same thing now just happening across multiple other areas. You I don't know, but I'm going to guess. If you took a survey across the Western world in 2018-19 around their belief in their democracies and their political systems and their influence on them as an individual, and you took the same survey today, you're going to find that there's been some awakening. People have realized, oh, democracy doesn't actually exist. It's a facade. Okay. Yeah. What happened? Did democracy become a facade suddenly over the last 5 years? No. It was a facade for many, many years. It was just, it has been revealed to us now that it's a facade on an increasingly daily basis. You and I were talking before we hit record about Trump. So Trump came out, he was going to stop the war in Iraq, in Ukraine. He was going to end all wars. He was going to release the Epstein list. Now we've gone to, oh, we're going to pardon Ghislaine Maxwell. We're going to, we've just told Zelensky that he can make incursions into Russia, which is a global catastrophe war. And he's gone and bombed Iran on behalf of his Israeli handlers. This is all good. I say that because it reveals to people the actual reality. There is no democracy. Trump was never there to do what people voted him in to do. He was there to do what he's being told to do. And he was all going to do that.
Yeah.
Which is to say that now there's a realization that democracy is a fraud. It's a facade. Again, nothing changed. All that changed was that we are now being revealed. We've gone from a covert world where everything was under the scenes and people believed in the nonsense to an overt world where it's difficult to believe in the nonsense anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's 100% accurate that. Are enough people realizing and will we get a change? I feel it takes a lifetime for some people to get to that level of wisdom.
We don't need everyone.
Yeah. We need a tipping point mass, don't we?
It's a dedicated minority with real dedication can and does swing the masses, because the masses will simply follow the path of easiest least resistance.
Yeah.
Now, second thing to that, I don't know for sure whether we win, whatever that looks like, but I do know this. I do know that if you and I were walking down a dark alley and five guys came out and they were clearly wanting to do us some harm and we have no way out, we're backed into brick walls all around us. Our highest probability of success is if you and I look each other in the eye and say, we are going to kill them.
Mm.
Because there is no other option. We've got nowhere to run. There's five of them. There's only two of us. If we try and placate them and we do this and that, we're done. Our highest probability of success is if we mentally prepare to die. But not, we don't even think about dying. We're like, we're going to kill them. That is just realistically, that is your best mental framework to be in. It doesn't change.
It makes you much more dangerous, by the way. That was one of the details about a ninja. It's the code you just mentioned, by the way. You go into every intervention on the basis accepting that this could indeed be death. And you find your peace with that, and then you fight with that degree of severity and intent, which often does the exact opposite. And instead of securing you death, sees you come out swinging and put your adversary onto his heels and heading for the game.
That when you do that, there's an energy that is created. We are frequency and energy. Again, we're getting a little bit sort of woo-woo here, but that's true.
It is true, yeah.
Everybody knows it. You can walk into a room and you can feel the energy of a person. Sometimes it's positive, sometimes it's negative. You create a certain energy. And at the end of the day, we're just souls inhabiting bodies. So play the game. Yep. Don't take it off so seriously.
I tend to have that view. I talk about it as a virtual reality, a gamification. Gamification is a very grand way. You know, we all played the video games, the 20 cents, the South African Rand 20 cents that used to pop into the machines for pinball and asteroids. Gamification allows you a dispassionate self-observation and self-awareness where you actually have your avatar viewing the back of your head and you just go, just do the best you can. Free yourself, you know, from this, keep pursuing a certain set of principles, let that be your code and it'll be where you agree. Let's go back more. We got interestingly ethereal there and quite spiritual, I would almost argue. Let's go back to practical markets. I think you've married Giselle Bundchen by being in gold, silver, precious metals and miners trade. And I think looking over the fence at anything else is actually designed to throw you off the bucking bull and stop you from winning the ultimate prize. Are there other asset categories that you would say, because I'm very narrow in terms of this. I see this as a reserve asset crisis. And of all the commodities, there's really only one that is a reserve asset with the monetized silver. I mean, precious metals as a category, let's say. And thematically, you cross epochs. And we crossed an epoch in 2020 when they did the massive splurge you had peak bonds blow off into the high, and then you had the major reversal and the proliferation. And that was a boundary line. CV19 was the grand boundary line for the end of the fiat debt experiment. We hit the wall on that, and everything has been subsequently very clear about that, and I see that continuing. The epoch investors, I get people saying, yeah, look how Bitcoin has done better over this period. And they're all selecting data samples that suit them. First of all, they'll take gold when it was at a relative high and all of this nonsense. And I say that's never the way to view the world. You know, you and I can play table tennis and then we can pivot to have a game of golf. And you've got to bring different kits to play table tennis than you bring to play golf. If I take my table tennis bat and I play a round of golf against you who's brought a proper woods and putting, you're winning no matter how talented I am.
Yeah.
And my argument is we're in a new epoch, and this entire epoch, you've mentioned capital preservation, which is the key. It's no longer return on capital, it's return of, et cetera, et cetera. There is one core theme, and this is such a deep rut of a theme that on your mountain bike going down that hill, you just got to ride that rut. Don't try get out of it. You're going to wipe out. The best thing is you get all the way down the hill. You will not miss a bend. You're in the rut. You just zip all the way home. You just pedal. Is that accurate, or are there other things that people should be looking? Should they be looking left and right? Is there a more beautiful woman to be had?
Yeah, look, I mean, there's if we look at geographies, again, I look at relative stuff. You know, as a basis, I'm a deep value investor. So we look at what's cheap. And what's cheap relative to other things. Emerging markets today are very cheap relative to developed markets. And here's what's happening, in my opinion. You have the sort of, say, emerging frontier markets part of the world, right? And for your and my career, certainly, and even people older than us, those have had risk. Okay, we viewed them as risky. They have been risky. And then you got your developed world, and that's been less risky. And it has been less risky. But what happens is, broadly, it gets priced accordingly. Emerging markets, frontier markets get priced for the risks that they exhibit. Okay, obviously, these things go in cycles, but broadly, that's it. Same thing with the developed markets. I would say that at this point in time today, we have this hangover of the precedent set for the last 80-odd years. And what we're seeing is a mispricing of risk, i.e. in the developed world, emerging, European countries, as an example, they're being priced as if there isn't that much risk. On the counter to that is on emerging markets, they're still priced for risk. Now, I'm not saying they're mispriced. I'm just saying that on a relative basis, because you need to make capital allocations. When I look at the two, it's very easy for me to go, you know what? I should be long that and short this. Again, we don't short. We don't take leverage generally. We prefer just to be long only. But emerging market space is clearly holding less risk relative to the developed markets. And those are the things that we look at. So there's an area that I think is worth looking at for sure. It's not about sectors necessarily. There's a whole lot of stuff. I mean, we've got a dividend income portfolio, which is just, it's littered with, gosh, I don't know, parts manufacturers and cigarette distributors and palm oil and like all the everything you can think of, right? The basis to it is that we are looking for deep value companies, low PEs, high dividend payouts, low debts. That's kind of, and we go, okay, what does that look like? What is, and boom, something pops up and it happens to be a kindergarten. I'm like, cool. All right. Kindergarten it is. But the reality is they're all found in almost all of them are found in the emerging markets.
Hmm.
Why is that? It's predictive of the fact that emerging markets relative to these other markets are much cheaper.
Yeah.
So,
can I jump in? And I don't like interrupting you because you build your thoughts beautifully and it's very easy to destroy your great value. But in one way, I'd like to add that the disproportionate capital allocation to the NASDAQ Mag 7 has hyper distorted the real risks of America to the point where it's assumed to be the very low risk. And we're actually in the epoch from a trading nation geographic risk. In the same way I was saying, don't live in the West. The money shouldn't live in the West anymore either. And that the disproportionate value on a relative sense, we're having the same extreme, if I'm reframing what I felt this, and it's great that you brought us here, that actually when capital flows out of America, you're going to actually see PE expansion in all of these incredible value add areas. And you're just early. But the only thing I would add is, the gold is the here and the now, I think, and the debt-based and the reserve asset going into reset.
Mm.
But you're very well positioned for the next epoch that comes, which is the release of that concentration, that black hole for capital that suddenly unbundles and flattens out into a hole in the ground. And all of that international capital suddenly flowing into the Grand South and the emerging, which is going to see your kind of investments, PE stretch, more money going in there, and it's going to overshoot. And actually, the West is going to have to get priced for the ultimate risk on the basis of the debt fallout. And the other nations are going to have to get repriced upwards as less risky as part and parcel. Brazilian companies that grow fruit and food and everything that everybody needs, especially when cost of the living is going up because of the fiat debasement. So sorry to jump in there, but there's almost an overshoot that's happened in the U.S., that when it unwinds and starts to price risk properly, it's going to lead to a rebound in all the areas you're in.
You even need that to take place. Okay, so we've been running that portfolio since the beginning of 2021. Okay. It's been, if you were to say, okay, you're fighting against the, say, the S&P, which we know what's happened there. We've outperformed it.
Yeah.
So that's without any of what you've just discussed, which may or may not take place, right? I happen to agree with you, but I'm not basing my investment on what might transpire over the course of that thing. And I've managed to compound capital without that taking place. How do you do it? You do it by compounding your dividend income. We're getting some of these things 10, 15% divvies, okay?
Yeah.
And you're buying them in PEs of sub 15. There's another dynamic here, which is, I'll just throw it out there, which is that most of the capital that is in the world today is in passive, aggregated capital, right? Passive funds, Fidelity, or whoever. And these are all in what are now typically multi-billion dollar funds. These guys cannot buy the stuff we buy because it's simply too small. And it's not that it's dangerous. It's just they can't buy it because they're running billion-dollar funds. Okay, and some of the stuff we're buying is market cap of, I don't know, billion, under a billion sometimes.
You're talking about the difference between an elephant and being nimble.
Yeah.
In a financial
sense. So a small market cap does not represent risk. Certainly when you diversify, like we've got a portfolio, like these are like 1% positions in each of these companies. So the point I'm making is like that there are opportunities that you can diversify away from the risk without taking significant downside overall equity market risk. And what I mean by is if the S&P sells off, what does it mean to these?
Yeah.
Now, and to answer that question, I would say, okay, if you're a big mutual fund or if you're a big any of these funds, you sell what you own. That's all you can sell. If you don't own the stuff, frankly, which we own, you can't sell it. That's not to say that other people might not get spooked and sell it. That's possible. Maybe it happens. But the degree to which they would sell it is highly probable that it's far, far less than Joe Soap, who's just liquidating because he's calling in his fund. He's like, I'm getting torched here. So the redemptions flow through and you get something akin to maybe the TMT bubble where the NASDAQ dropped, 80? So yeah. I'm not predicting that, but there's another element here, and this is quite simple. So JP Morgan produced a chart, I think it was end of 24. There's a scatter diagram showing the returns of the S&P 500 over 100 years of history. Every time that the PE on the S&P hit 20, if you bought it, this was it. If you bought the S&P when PE was 23, your returns for the next 10 years were between -2 and 2% for 10 years, okay? Now, on average, the S&P has returned 10% every year, on average. But you can imagine if you have a 10-year period where it returns basically zero or -2 or 2, call it zero, then what happens for the following 10 years? Well, probably you get about 20% return, right? To get you your average of 10. It's kind of what happens. Again, cycle. So where are we at today on the S&P? I haven't checked. It's about 25.
Can I jump in on that point? But if America is going to go through what Japan went through, you could actually have 2.5 decades of negative return almost. Because we've got an almost bigger cycle that's coming to an end if you're talking US.
Exactly. But on the downside, and this was 100% accurate. There was never one time when if you bought the S&P when the PE was 23, there was never a single time when you did better than 2%.
Yeah.
Not one. Okay. So now this might be a bigger cycle. So maybe that lasts more than 10 years. But it's just, again, it's risk mitigation. It's a lot of this is about knowing where not to be.
Yeah. And don't buy the expensive stuff right now, which is why you mentioned NVIDIA as well, wailing into the new thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, fascinating. I love that geographic. Where to drop some of the nations that you are investing in, because we're going to have to wrap soon, and I want you to talk about the Nauki. Some of the
All right. Again, we run two portfolios. So on the one that I was referencing there, we're talking about like kindergarten companies, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That one's just pretty much we're almost geographically agnostic.
Yeah.
We just say, where's their value? And the reality is we've got almost nothing in North America, very little in Europe. There's just no value. So we're fairly heavily weighted towards Southeast Asia, some in the Middle East, some in Eastern Europe, a little bit in South America. There's a smattering of other things in US and Europe, but by and large, it's not there. And in our asymmetric portfolio, again, it's more sort of sector-oriented towards commodity space, things like that. And then geographically, we took positions back in 21 in Argentina. We continue to remain long that. Look, geopolitically, Argentina, I mentioned that before, the consolidation of the Western US-led system is going to favor Argentina. And they're going to continue to open that up to the banking cabal. We can argue about whether that's good or bad.
It's only bad. Again, I mean, it's the same as Mexico with Shinbaum.
Francis, you dealt the cards, you play the game.
Yeah, exactly.
So
yeah.
We're long Argentina, we'll continue to be long there. We have been long Greece because it was just so undervalued. But other than that, it's mostly sectors within the asymmetric portfolio that we are attracted to. Although we've bought China. So we bought China in there when they all got smashed, when the large cap Chinese stocks got smashed. We also bought small caps.
We have a huge technical setup on the China A50. Huge. It's gonna do, we think, triple in quite short succession. We're very bullish.
It's interesting you say that, because we've looked at it. We just look at it from a fund of Intel perspective. And yeah, I'm like, this stuff could be three times the price and not be expensive.
I'll show you the chart.
Interesting.
Yeah, I'll show you the chart just for fun on that one. This is a setup that we've got in the community. And it's a macro as well. It's not, and the more macro the technical setup, generally the far better the outcome we typically get. Let's just get that one out. You're at a breakout. And in terms of our targeting expectation, this is our HVF method and the draw tool, which has helped us make unbelievable macro calls. We're seeing a 12,268 for the A50 A share index, Shanghai Stock Exchange, A50 A shares. And you've just triggered here. And that was at about 3,900. So you're 4 to 12. You're a 3X on that one. And I'll send you that chart. I'd say that's a long-term hold. In fact, we've done a model portfolio as well, Chris, which is 50% precious metals, of which 30% is the physical to protect you from the great taking, of which it's 20% gold, 10%, silver, maybe 5 of platinum. You can work it in and fiddle the numbers slightly. And then the 20% on the 50% precious metals is miners. So you've got a 30 and a 20, miners, 20, and the actual hold the physical, because that's guarantees you even counterparty risk. Even if you hold share certificates, I still think these frauds could screw you. And then the other half is made up of 20% crypto, which is none of which is Bitcoin. It's the new surveillance ISO 222 cryptos. And the 30% is the Straits Index, which is Singapore and China. And they both have this setup on a monthly time frame, which is huge. And I can see Singapore being the acceptable face of a post-American financial collapse of global stock market listing. The Middle East and Singapore are going to benefit where London and New York fall, and Paris and Bonn or Munich, whichever you want. These indices are going to really, really run. Just interesting you mentioned that you were in China, because we're very bullish technically on that. And that was our portfolio. Yeah, that's great. This has really been enjoyable, Chris. Give a closing statement for someone. If you're talking to your son, you're wise, you're smart, you've got years of experience. Make your own personal statement for chilling, enjoying life, realizing it's a game, all those good things we've already handled. How people should position mental posture for what's probably going to be a reset, problem, reaction, solution, Western vibe, and everything that goes with it. And then also your services at Len Orkney for everyone. Sort of closing statement.
Gosh,
talking to your
from my own perspective, the things that I see as being most valuable, because that we're in now a conflict. It's a war.
Yeah.
And wars are fought. And I wrote an article about this in one of the insiders, maybe two or three issues back. And I talked about how people say, we're not in a war. It's like wars are probably 80% of wars are not kinetic.
Yeah.
Or 80% of the fight of a war is not kinetic. And certainly the asymmetry now to fighting a war with bombs, as opposed to using technology, psyops, and all manner of other things, is just, it's indicative that you're going to have more of that. So anyways, how do you build resistance to that? I think one is certainly community, which you referenced. I'm very, very fortunate by hook or crook or just like literally landing up having the platform that I have and being vocal as I've been. It's attracted people to me, people that I value, that are incredibly useful to me. And I don't mean that in a sense of using someone. You know, it's all, everything's a relationship. But I would say in that respect that, you know, the people that you're around have a significant impact on you and your ability to navigate what we're in now, let alone what is likely to come. And I don't have the answers to that at all. I have some answers and I have thoughts and I have what I can bring to the table, and I try and do that to my best of my ability. But we are, you know, as human beings, one of the things that I think differentiates us to a large degree from other animals is our our ability to cooperate with one another. We can build things that are unbelievable. How do we do that? We do it via cooperation. So that sense of community, we're going to have to rebuild things. And to some degree, that's how I started up the business we were talking about another time. But bringing together doers addressing obvious problems as opposed to just saying, oh, someone else will build it, someone else will fix it. That may or may not be true. I don't think that's a good way to live your life. So it's having principles. It's just also understanding it's a game, and don't take yourself so seriously. Especially if you've been successful. Hubris is dangerous. It's one of those dangerous things. Hubris and ego is the most dangerous thing to any money manager. So try not to have any of that. And live your life as well to some degree. You know, we've been through, I don't know about you, Francis, but there's been this period where you get caught up in trying to fix so many different risks and problems that I guess to some degree it's easy to stop and just enjoy the blue sky sometimes and the sunshine on your face. And just realize it's a game, and you've got to play it to your best of your abilities. So, but look, my day-to-day operations are about managing capital, which I love. And I love trying to figure out, the world and the way it works and all the mechanisms, and to look for advantages that can benefit me. We are ultimately creatures that look to benefit our own existence. And I don't think we should apologize for that. Find what you like, find what you enjoy. Having purpose, I think, is certainly for a male, it's one of the most important things you could ever have. Without purpose, we're just easily distracted. We're easily corralled into all sorts of
addictions. Drink, sports,
media, or just nonsense, whether it be food. Put good food in your body, put good thoughts in your mind, like hang out with good, positive people. Doers, people that are looking for solutions and doing something about things. That's my, I try and stay away from people who just bitch and moan, not because they might be incorrect about a particular thing, but again, my highest probability of success is to be able to take actionable, advances that further me, and whether they land up being right or wrong, I don't know, but it's going to give me the highest probability of success. So that's my view on things. I know it's a little bit of a long-winded, rambling one, but...
No, I think there's a lot of good pieces in there to sort out. It's a tough question to be ambushed with, talking to your younger self or your future son or your existing son or whatever the case, trying to give counsel. It's a tough one, and I think you included a lot of good components in there, and I think it was truly, truly worthwhile. How do people that wish to engage with your investment ideology and have listened to some of what you've said and feel attracted to you by commonality, by theme, how should they get in touch? And is there anything they should know in advance of any conversations you may have in the future?
So main platform is Capitalist Exploits, founded capitalistexploits.at. That's where we've got our publishing business, and we just publish basically what we're doing in the asset management business. For those people who would like to go down that path, it's glenorchycapital.net. And those are the two places that you can find us.
Excellent. Yeah, good. We'll drop those links in below so that hopefully we can get some engagement for your time, for you and your business. And as I say, as someone who's consistently been out there, Chris's message has been the same. His focus has been the same, and his performance will clearly speak for itself. I like consistency in people. I like people whose messages are in some ways predictable because you know them, and they continue to be who they've always been. So I truly think if people are enjoying the video and the content, they should certainly give it a look. Chris, I want to thank you massively for your time today and for showing up. And let's not let it run so long before we do this again.
Absolutely. Been a pleasure, always.
Tired of profit wipeouts and blown accounts from following trade signal groups and other YouTube channels? Looking for a better way to trade, reduce your stress, and minimize your risk? Become a skilled technical analyst and see the charts and markets in a new light using the successfully proven HVF method by Francis Hunt, while being surrounded and supported by a principled, structured, and experienced community. Enjoy a constructive learning environment while practically trading markets, supported by a bespoke platform run through browser and app, specifically designed to teach and engage you whilst learning and growing as the markets move. This is not a Telegram or Slack signal group. All trade ideas are based on a proprietary technical analysis process honed over decades, which is the HVF method, leading to trade ideas with fast-moving breakouts and tight stops, exact entries and exits, nuanced interim considerations, and ultimately, strong rewards. Submissions are graded and scored by Francis for potential high-quality setups, and we provide bespoke tools to help get the job done properly and with precision. Over time and with focused effort, you'll begin to look at charts and price action just like Francis. Community updates every day by Francis and our three webinars a week provide a 360-degree approach, which are presented by our experienced team of trade leaders to spot potential trades. We're a community of self-actualized individuals, spanning the globe and active 24/7, 365. The premium community provides a warm, supportive, and cooperative place for people willing to listen, participate, contribute, and to learn. We've changed thousands of traders' lives. Transform your approach to trading now. Transform your life. Book an introductory call with us